Breaking news, this is Jordan Seculo. Today on Jay Seculo Live, Jay Seculo reacts to special counsel Bob Mueller's first and final statement on the Mueller report.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Seculo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Jay Seculo Live. This is Jordan Seculo. We're going to go right to my dad, Jay Seculo, chief counsel of the ACLJ, and also an attorney for President Trump, one of the senior attorneys for President of the United States, Donald Trump, in reaction to what is Bob Mueller's, as he said in his own words, his kind of first statement on the Mueller reports over this 2 years, and final statement. In a sense, saying he will not be testifying to Congress, that the report is his testimony. I want to go right to the president's, one of the president's top attorneys, Jay Seculo, my dad, for his reaction to this press conference by special counsel Bob Mueller.
So, number one, Jordan, it was, I think there's a couple of takeaways. One is the investigation, as far as they're concerned, is complete. It's done. It's finished. He said his office is closing. He's resigning. He's returning to private life. So all the speculation that he had ongoing activity through the special counsel's office was, you know, obviously incorrect as far as the special counsel's office goes. What's significant here is that if you read the reports, which obviously we have, there's nothing that he said today that's not in the report. In other words, they came to the conclusion that there was no collusion, no conspiracy with the Russians or Russian officials or other parties by the Trump campaign. That's number one. Number two, on the obstruction, they did not come to a conclusion on obstruction. They said that, and this is exactly what happened, they left that to the Department of Justice. They talked about the OLC guidelines where a president can't be indicted. That was also in the report. And then the Attorney General, in consultation with the Deputy Attorney General, said there was no evidence of obstructive conduct. So no obstruction. So nothing in that sense. I mean, there's nothing in this today that changes what was in the report, other than you heard Bob Mueller speak. I think the interesting thing is it's pretty clear he does not plan on testifying.
No.
That was pretty obvious what he said.
He said, do we have the sound? Let's play. This is in Bob Mueller's own words.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I am making that decision myself. No one has told me whether I can or should testify or speak further about this matter. There has been discussion about an appearance before Congress. Any testimony from this office would not go beyond our report. It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made.
So there, Dad, is his answer to Jerry Nadler on appearing before that committee.
Yeah, so I think, look, I mean, he has spoken through his report. I mean, there are aspects of it, as I've said before, that we disagree with. I think they inverted the burdens of proof, and this prosecutor's jobs are not exoneration. It's to either bring a case or not. And in this particular case, we've talked about this 100 times on the obstruction issue, they let it go up to the Attorney General's office to make that determination, which is appropriate under the rules and regulations. They made the determination. No obstruction. No collusion, no conspiracy. We'll talk more about it after the break. But again, there was the news is acting like this is big news when the reality is this is exactly what's in his report.
And nothing, you know, different. It always irks me what you just said, what he says when he constantly repeats that, you know, if they could have found that the president didn't do something, but that no prosecutors do that. Judges do that. Courts do that. They find people not guilty. Not prosecutors don't issue reports saying you're not guilty ever. They just don't issue. But instead, this team kind of went halfway, which has been the criticism. But again, Bob Mueller said, this is all you're going to hear from him. After this 2 years, and they made him out to be this kind of liberal hero in a sense, this was it. That was like 9.5 minutes. And he said, I don't plan on speaking any more to this topic ever again. The report speaks for itself. My dad continues to join us in the next segment. If you want to ask any questions or talk your comments on this, 1-800-684-3110. Unique to have him on as the president's attorney, responding to Bob Mueller's first and final press conference on the Mueller report. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Jay Seculo, my dad, he joins us and continues to join us, 1-800-684-3110.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Bob Mueller this morning, it was kind of a surprise announcement. The press release went out earlier this morning that he would be doing a news conference about an hour before our radio broadcast. He did just that. They said it would be substantial. Kind of questioned how substantial it was in the sense that it was mostly him just repeating what was already in the report, has already been in the news. But what is most substantial is he's saying he's not going to be talking publicly about the matter anymore, thus indicating that he will not be testifying before Congress or Jerry Nadler's committee. Right. This is Bob Mueller again today announcing that this is over. Take a listen in Bob Mueller's, which you don't get to hear often these last 2 years, in Bob Mueller's own words, from Bob Mueller's own mouth. Take a listen.
I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the special counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life.
Yeah, I think that's a big takeaway here. That one and the fact that he's not planning on testifying. Those are the two big items. Everything else that he said was in the report. I want to reiterate that. There's nothing new here. We have a disagreement as to the way they inverted, as I said, this burden of proof of exoneration, which is not what prosecutors do. It's contrary to our whole rule of law. But having said that, remember this. Note that there was a determination by the special counsel that there was no collusion or conspiracy, which would be the technical legal term, on the Russia aspect of this, Russian interference with the Trump campaign involvement, no collusion, no conspiracy. On the obstruction issue, remember, they listed various items. They said, we're not drawing a conclusion. We are instead basically not going to make a prosecutorial decision there. And instead, it went to the Department of Justice, which is how it works, pursuant to the regulations within the Department of Justice, and the Attorney General, in consultation with the Deputy Attorney General and others within the Department of Justice, made the determination that there was no obstructive conduct by the president, period. That is it. Now, Congress is doing their thing, but as far as Bob Mueller's report, to say this is some new news or new revelation, that's just fundamentally false.
And of course,
it's not true. There is no new information that Bob Mueller shared today, other than he's not planning on testifying.
And the media does not want to focus in on the top line conclusion of volume one of the report, which is that there was no conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. They don't want to focus on that, of course.
No, of course not.
I mean, that's
the fact of the matter is, which was that was the whole basis upon which this whole thing
the whole
started.
Reason he existed.
And we
is
could
special
go through
counsel.
The whole. We can, you know, you could rehearse all of the irregularities in this investigation, yep. which are numerous. But the point is, I think the country's beyond that. But again, this idea that the Mueller report somehow was a new light was shed on it today by Bob Mueller's statements, it's just incorrect. That's not correct.
No, and then again, he said that. This is Bob Mueller, Byte 17. So don't try to read into what he's saying today. It's the report is what he's talking about, Byte 17.
We chose those words carefully, and the work speaks for itself. And the report is my testimony. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
I mean, there it is, Dad.
Yeah, no, he clearly doesn't want to appear before Congress. Look, I think he'd have a difficult, it wouldn't be easy for him, because there are prosecutors on those committees, and I think they would say, did you think it was your role to exonerate? By the way, remember in that exoneration line, which people are also ignoring, the president said, nor are we saying that the president committed a crime.
Yeah.
Remember, that's actually in the special counsel verdict. So we're not exonerating, but we're not saying he committed a crime. So, again, I think that whole process was incorrect, and my colleagues have shared that as well. But the reality is that as we look at it right now, I think that this is, you know, it's been hyped over the last 2 years of what the conclusions were going to be, and then they got the conclusion that was deflating. And now you move forward, and today what Bob Mueller said that was most significant, besides that he's done, he's going to private life, that he's not testifying, that's pretty much it. I mean, everything else was in that report, and I think it's worth reiterating that for the American people, and certainly for our listening audience and others, that to understand what actually was at play here. And what was at play here was today, this was the final statement. I think, I don't know this, I think Bob Mueller made this public statement really because he's not planning on giving any testimony, so this was the time for the American people to hear his voice. He took no questions. It was a prepared statement that he read, but again, there was nothing in it that was not already in the report.
And that's what President Trump just tweeted about half an hour ago. Nothing changes from the Mueller report. There was insufficient evidence, and therefore in our country a person is innocent. The case is closed. Thank you. I mean, that was from President Trump. So, Dad, just to reiterate so that people are hearing from you today, because the news is making this out to be like it's like the Mueller report was re-released.
Revelation, right.
I think it's just because no one's ever, it's been so long since he's made, I think he did one speech at a graduation right before he became special counsel, so it had nothing to do with this, and that was over 2 years ago, so this was the first time in 2 years people have even had recent audio or visual of Bob Mueller speaking on this issue.
Yeah. I understand why it was interesting. I mean, while the news is covering it, this was it's interesting that Bob Mueller spoke. It's interesting that he is the first time people have heard his voice, many people for the first time. But the reality is, again, I want to underscore here, which I think is very important, that the conclusions that he kind of summarized today, sort of, are no different than what's in the report. So this is not new. This is in the report, this exoneration versus, you know, vindication kind of thing. And again, you know, he said we're not concluding that the president committed a crime. We're not exonerating him. We're not saying he committed a crime. That's all in the report. What's interesting here is how the reaction's been. Because look, I mean, the fact of the matter is, this is not those that were seeking to use this for political means will continue to use it for political means. But that hasn't changed. There's nothing new that Bob Mueller said in substance that impacts any of this. In my view, and I think the view of anybody that's being fair, this is already out there. I've talked to a number of reporters today. This information is already out. This has been out for months now, and nothing's changed. And remember, the conclusion is, and that's what's important on any of these, is what is the conclusion? No collusion, no conspiracy. The determination by the Department of Justice that there was no obstructive conduct. From the legal standpoint, the case is closed.
Is there any significance to the timing, or is this just because he's done? I mean, is it just that the office has fully gotten rid of what they needed to do, work with the Department of Justice on?
I think there was all this speculation about you know, what this was going to be today, but I think it was, no, I think you're right, Jordan. I think he was done. He's finished. He's done with his report. His staff is going back to their other jobs. He's going back into private life. He said this is the last time, as we played it now, I mean, it's the last time he's going to speak on this issue. So I think he's done. I think this is, this is it. Now it's going to be the politics of it. Yeah. I don't think this changes the political calculus at all. Those that are going to keep wanting to do investigations will keep wanting to do investigations. Those that are going to fight it are going
to
fight it.
Well, we certainly know politically he's not rushing to join that fray. I mean, he made that clear today by saying he's not.
I think he does not want to join that fray.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he made that very clear.
The idea, again, also with this coming to a close, and he made that, again, statement that I don't think it gets repeated often enough, that Congress needs to take seriously foreign actors trying to influence our elections, separate from conspiring with specific campaigns, that this is something we still haven't taken seriously as a country, and that really falls on Congress. And he made that point, and I think that's a fair point to make to all members of Congress today, and maybe a message to Democrats as well, as, hey, instead of just focusing on the president, maybe focus on what Russia's going to try to do or China's going to do in 2020.
Well, look, I mean, he said he did say it's what he started with. I mean, yeah. And that was the original mandate. And then as these things always happen, they go from the original mandate to these other matters. And but the media, like you said, Jordan, correctly, the media wants to focus on the other matters. They do not want to focus on the fact that there's no collusion, no obstruction. I mean, there's been a determination. I need to remind people again of this. There's been a determination here by the Department of Justice, by the Attorney General of the United States, that there was no obstructive conduct. That is it. From a legal standpoint, the end. That's it. Now, the politics are a different issue, but the legal issue is done. So this was Bob Mueller's closing conference.
I think clearly did not want to become like a Jim Comey. He said, I did my work. We did our work within the parameters that we could do our work. I mean, you can question how they wrote their report. That's fine. But that's it, and we're done. Do you expect any of the other this was something, too. I mean, Bob Mueller speaking for himself, I know he had a team of attorneys and investigators too. I guess there's potential that some of those could offer to testify, but some still work for the Department of Justice, right?
Well, no, I don't. They just can't offer to testify. There's all kind of constitutional issues with that. Yeah,
but
so that's not.
People
so
have already brought that up now. If it can't be Bob Mueller, can they bring in other people to try and do? So you don't think that is going to necessarily be the case?
No, I don't think. I think their legal issues there would be substantial.
Okay, so again, you've got the report from the president's attorney in the immediate reaction to Bob Mueller. What Bob Mueller says is his first statement and final statement on the Mueller report, and that the Mueller report it speaks for itself, and that is his testimony. Dad, thanks so much for joining us and breaking in with us to react to Bob Mueller's statement. We appreciate that. Thanks, Dad. All right, folks, we're going to continue to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. If you've got questions about it, you can continue to call in, but we're actually going to pivot, as we plan to do, to discuss today, to the political race in 2020, because honestly, I don't think there was a lot new there in the Mueller report. I think we needed the reaction from the president's attorney. We got that. Happens to be the host of our broadcast as well, and my dad. And now we pivot to politics. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So we have covered, I don't think you could have gotten it from a better source. The president's attorney joining us on the broadcast. So my dad, who's been on the road working in response to the surprise Bob Mueller press conference this morning. You got the reaction live from the president's top attorney, Jay Sekulow, on this broadcast. If he deems necessary, may rejoin the broadcast later on in the second half hour. But I think that we covered everything. It wasn't like Bob Mueller gave a 45-minute speech here or took questions. He basically just reread the same words from the report. And the big news was his job is done. He is resigning from DOJ. The special counsel's office is closing. And he does not plan to speak publicly on the matter ever again. And that his testimony is the report itself. You can take up issues with how the report was written. You can take issue with this whole, we can't find someone not guilty. That's not really jobs of prosecutors. You know, they either bring charges or don't. They don't determine guilt or innocence. But what is the biggest issue, I think, still from this is that there was no collusion. There was no conspiracy, the legal term, between the Trump campaign and the government of Russia to interfere with the 2016 election. And we should all be reminded, as Bob Mueller told the American people, that Congress should be focusing in on state actors, not necessarily conspiring with campaigns. Don't be distracted by that, but state actors trying to influence our upcoming elections. And that is where we should be focused on when it comes to securing our elections. 1-800-684-3110, talking about elections. Do you know, as of today, we are less than 1 month away from the first Democratic debate. It's in Miami on June 26th and 27th, because they're going to have to two-tier it, because, I don't even know, is it two-tiered or four-tiers at this point when you have 24 candidates? I've been part of those Republican debates when they had to two-tier it, and then they were still just so many people on stage. Than it's kind of hard to believe that we are less than a month away from that first Democrat debate. When they're going to really, when Joe Biden has to stand with Bernie Sanders, at least the top 10 or so candidates on stage, and go at each other.
Yeah, it'll really escalate from there. But those first two nights, Jordan, June 26th and 27th, you're not even going to get every candidate that's filed for presidency on the stage. You're going to get two sets of 10. They're going to use a combined criteria of polling and fundraising to determine which 20 make those two stages. But you're right, Jordan. We're about 4 weeks away from this really picking up. I know we're going to get to this a little bit more, Jordan, but I would just tell you this. Even though there are 24 declared candidates, I really think there are about half a dozen that have a credible shot at the nomination based on a couple of criteria. And I do think there's no question that Joe Biden is the front runner. All of the polls indicate that. But Jordan, I would tell you, and I think you would agree, having done these campaigns, if you look inside these numbers just a little bit more, especially at the size of the crowds he's drawing, which we learned last time, Jordan, really does have a big impact on how well you're doing. I think there are cracks in that Biden campaign. He's the front runner, but this is far from a foregone conclusion.
I will tell you, from successful campaigns I've worked on and from successful campaigns I've worked against, and those who was on the losing side of the campaign. I remember working for George W. Bush when he decided on his reelection campaign to go out and do a rally. It was massive. It was filling up arenas. It was filling up outdoor concert venues. It was a massive event for his reelection campaign for his supporters. So again, it was a very close election, but he had enthusiasm. Barack Obama, a great example of having enthusiasm, able to fill the rafters up and continue to do that. President Trump obviously took it to the next level, and numbers people had not seen before in modern political times, that many people would actually show up and wait to hear from a politician at a political rally. It was more like a reunion of one of the more famous bands in the world kind of feel. and it was to hear from a presidential candidate. Now people are continuing to do that for the current president, for President Trump, as he begins kind of his campaign and starts doing more campaign-style events. When Joe Biden did his first major rally, so he did some small events, and they said that they were small events, so I'll give him that, even though they looked really small. When he did his first major rally, his campaign reported 6,000. The media than questioned whether that was even the case. That's a lot less than the minimum number attending Donald Trump's rally seems somewhere around 20,000 if the venue can hold that. Obviously, venue size is important, but 20,000 and usually thousands of people outside who view it on screens.
Well, just by contrast, Jordan, Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren are both drawing larger crowds in Iowa than Joe Biden did. For someone who's a clear front runner, I do think that's a fairly significant sign. Look, there's no doubt that if you look at the polling, Joe Biden is in the position you want to be in, followed by Bernie Sanders. If you look at fundraising, Bernie Sanders is probably in the catbird seat. But look, I agree with you, Jordan, especially in this day of social media and a candidate's ability to directly interact with the voters. You know, it used to take a lot of money to interact with the voters. That is not the case anymore. So if you are rolling out your campaign and trying to draw people to an event and you're being outdrawn by the mayor of South Bend, Jordan, that's not a small worry. That's a significant worry for Joe Biden, in my opinion.
You know, we're going to go through both the polling and the financial standing, because I think that's what's important here and kind of who we believe are the top 10 candidates right now. Now, obviously, Than, before we do that, it's always important for everyone to remember who's joining in on this conversation, and I want to hear from you. Kind of two questions I have for you on the 2020 Democratic presidential primary. One, who do you think is their strongest candidate who's announced so far, or maybe you think there's someone who hasn't announced that could be stronger, to take on President Trump? Even if you're a Trump supporter, I just want your honest opinion. Who do you think would be the strongest? And number two, do you think there is a potential for a breakout other than Joe Biden of this group? So do you think, and do you have a guess at who that is? Do you feel like Beto O'Rourke could still come? You know, he's still, the media still thinks he has that opportunity. Could it be Kamala Harris, who kind of comes back from what has been kind of a sliding campaign, but started off very hot on a high note? If Joe Biden hadn't got in, it would have looked like kind of her versus Bernie Sanders in the top tier. Elizabeth Warren has one of the largest campaign apparatuses, was very popular before with the left, and certainly, cannot be taken for granted. So any of those candidates do you think that could kind of emerge as the main competition to Biden? So do you, one, who do you think is the best candidate to take on President Trump? Even if you are a Republican, put on your Democrat hat if you can. I know it can be pretty difficult to do that. But two, is there someone other than Joe Biden that you think can come out of this field and surprise people? Because, Stan, that can happen at these debates. There can be someone that has a moment, maybe when they have the opportunity versus Joe Biden, to really break out and stand out as someone unique and different that then people rally behind with both financial support and in those early states start getting more involved in the campaigns.
Yeah, it's a great question, Jordan, because, you know, if you were only going to give me one candidate and I was supposed to predict the eventual nominee, I would pick Joe Biden. But if you were going to offer me Joe Biden or the field, Jordan, I would take the field, and I think I would take it pretty readily. I do think Bernie Sanders is the next most likely, but Jordan, I disagree with some of the prognosticators out there. I think next in line is actually Kamala Harris for a number of reasons that we can get into. But once you start going down this list, Jordan, I don't see a whole lot of potential for breakout. I don't really like Elizabeth Warren's chances, even though she does have a good infrastructure. I think I don't really like Pete Buttigieg's chances. Beto O'Rourke maybe has the money to go the distance, but Jordan, I really think you have to go outside of the declared candidates once you get past those top three in my book.
Well, we'll see what the callers think. So we've got a second half hour to discuss it. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Less than a month from the first Democrat presidential debate.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
I'm talking about freedom. I'm talking about Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
You know, it's interesting, as we talk about politics in the second half of the broadcast, and again, Bob Mueller's making his first and final statement. We're not ignoring that. We had on the presence of top attorney Jay Sekulow, the host of this broadcast. My dad is traveling and working on some other matters, but we had him on to react to Bob Mueller's first and final statement on the Mueller report. And you heard me right, first and final, says he does not plan on speaking about this ever again, that this is his testimony. We do have a call in about this, so I kind of want to take it right off the top, answer that question, because we're also focusing in on politics. We're less than a month away from the first Democrat debate. The first debate is on June 26th in Miami, so we're less than a month out from that first Democratic debate. Let me go to, is Mary ready? Mary in Maryland, online too. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. I know you had a question about Mueller and congressional testimony.
Yes, thank you. This may be a dumb question because it seems that Mueller indicated that he would not be speaking again. But my question is, there was a lot of discussion at the time when Trump's former lawyer was invaded by the, I guess it was the FBI, so that Mueller could get information on Trump, which he then started questioning everybody on. And I wondered whether Congress could actually force him to speak before them.
So obviously, Mary, Jerry Nadler, I don't think he's made the statement yet today. He did make a statement about the Mueller, but more about the substance of the, he didn't say anything about the testifying yet, or at least I didn't see that being reported while we're live on the air. But Than, what we do know is that they could subpoena, so the House Judiciary Committee could vote to subpoena Bob Mueller if he refuses to testify, and they pursue his testimony even after he said, I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to deviate from the report. And again, initial reports were if he did do it, it would be behind closed doors with an opening statement. Well, now he's done that statement, and anything else would be behind closed doors. He's basically telling Congress, you're not going to learn anything or hear anything from me new. But they could obviously go the subpoena route, and then that can be fought in court. That could be fought out in court for a long period of time. DOJ could fight that out on behalf of Bob Mueller.
Yeah, and first of all, I think the special counsel made it pretty clear today, Jordan, that that is what he would require to even consider testifying. I think it would have to be a subpoena. He's not going to come voluntarily. And Jordan, I really feel strongly about this. I think it indicated that the special counsel probably has a better respect for his role as an investigator than other former investigators that we've seen. He said, look, I had a job to do. I did my job. I wrote my report. My conclusion is there. If I, you know, were to speak further, I would only reiterate what is in that report. And beyond that, my job is concluded. Here's what I expect. Jordan, I think there will be a lot of hollering from the Hill. I think Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler will both have a lot to say, but the proof will be in the pudding in whether or not they issue a subpoena. My own guess, Jordan, is that they won't, because I think they know they would lose in court. And even if they did win, I think they know the special counsel would come before them and not say anything new. So I bet you they will raise a lot of volume and not issue a subpoena. But if they do, Jordan, you're right. I think that will be a long, drawn-out court process in the end. I think they will ultimately lose. And I will just say this in closing. I found it very interesting that the special counsel began and ended his statement with an encouragement for Congress to focus on real threats. Threats like foreign interference on our elections, not tied to collusion. Don't take up a political fight. Actually do the job you are elected to do. That I don't think that should slip by Americans. He began his statement with that. He ended it on it. We'll see if Congress heeds that admonition.
Here he is. Do we have time to play some of it for people right now? Here's Bob Mueller, Byte 16.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I am making that decision myself. No one has told me whether I can or should testify or speak further about this matter. There has been discussion about an appearance before Congress. Any testimony from this office would not go beyond our report. It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made.
That kind of answered actually one of my own questions I had for my dad, which is, you know, could these outlier deputies decide to testify? And he said, you know, and when you read, listen carefully, any testimony from this office, so anyone from the special counsel's, what will be the former special counsel's office, their testimony would not go beyond what was in the report. We come back, we take your calls and your comments on the 2020 campaign. We get
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So you know, we're bringing back my dad, the host of this broadcast. He's been traveling on, working on other matters. Jay Sekulow, also top attorney to President Trump. So that if you were not joining us that first half hour, he joined us live to react to Bob Mueller's pretty short statement today, announcing that he is resigning his post as special counsel, closing up the special counsel's shop, and say that this that he expects this to be the final time he speaks on this matter, that the testimony speaks for itself, and that that's all he's willing to say. But we wanted to bring my dad back on as the president's top attorney to also address this just one more time. For those of you who may not have joined us in the first half hour, who are joining us now in the second half hour to hear from him. So Jay Sekulow, my dad, joining us again now. Dad, just with your reaction once again to what we heard from Bob Mueller.
So first of all, there was nothing of substance that was in Bob's statements that was not already contained in the report. So the report made this conclusion that based on the review of their evidence, that in fact there was no, what they, people call collusion, but conspiracy is the real legal term with regard to the Trump campaign and Russian operatives or the Russian government. So that's number one. Number two, just as the report says, while they lay out various acts in their obstruction investigation, they made no legal conclusion there. They said they don't exonerate the president, which, by the way, as I said before, prosecutors don't do. They're not in the exoneration business. They either bring charges or don't. And they deferred basically to the Department of Justice. And then the Attorney General of the United States, in consultation with the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, said that there was, in fact, no obstructive conduct on behalf of the president. So that's it. So what this means today is legally, from a legal perspective, the case is closed. The office is being basically dissolved. Bob Mueller is going to return to private life. The other lawyers out there are either going back to their private practices or back to their government, previous government positions that they had. And that is it. And he also made clear, as you mentioned, Jordan, that this was the last time you're going to hear from him, which was basically the first time that anybody heard from him.
Yeah.
So he's not planning on testifying. That became very clear in the statement because he believes that his report speaks for itself. So politically, you're exactly in the same position now. So you'll have the same political fighting going back and forth on this. But as it relates to the legal conclusion, the legal matter is resolved. It's done.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Senator Lindsey Graham, Dad, just put out this statement. Quote, today's statement by Mr. Mueller reinforces the findings of his report. And as for me, the case is over. Mr. Mueller has decided to move on and let the report speak for itself. Congress should follow his lead. We did get a question, Dad. Could Bob Mueller be subpoenaed? And what would then occur? I know you're not representing Bob Mueller, but what we explained was that the subpoena could be go into court.
Yeah, so I mean, could Jerry Nadler's committee or the other committees issue a subpoena to Bob Mueller? They could issue a subpoena, but under existing law, if the Department of Justice were to make the determination that it would not be appropriate for him to speak, they could simply exercise that executive. It's all within Article 2 of the Constitution.
Yeah.
So they would have the authority to do that. Now, what's interesting here is that Bill Barr, the Attorney General, previously had said if the special counsel wants to speak, no one's holding him back, and that's the case. No one is holding him back, but it appears that the special counsel doesn't want to testify. And I could imagine why he doesn't. The irregularities in this investigation from the outset are numerous, and they, as I said in the first part of our broadcast, this whole idea of exoneration, which is not what a prosecutor does, should not have even been in the report in the first place. Remember, there was a lot of speculation that we were going to issue a counter report. And while we had one prepared, we decided not to issue it because they were so wrong on the legal standard that it was almost like nothing to respond to because it was such a straightforward, poor legal analysis of what they did. The end result, though, is, and I think what's important for our audience and for the American people is that this, from a legal standpoint, this is done. The politics of the moment will still continue, but the legal aspect of it as it relates to the president is complete. It's finished. It's done. He said the case is done. He's done. He's closing his office. That's it. He's finished.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to agree with you. I don't think it was Bob Mueller was so concerned about testifying before Jerry Nadler as he was the Republicans that are on that committee and answering their questions about, as you said,
Strzok and Lisa Page, and how did you allow that to
right.
go on? What happened to the evidence that was gathered during that 2 months that they were working there when they were making those statements? So, yes, all of that had a plan. What about Bruce Orr and Fusion GPS? You could go through the whole analysis. You know what, though? The American people have had enough.
Yeah, I think from polling, the American people have had enough. I mean, they have said, like, move on. I think Bob Mueller understands that. The Democrats might not get that, though I assume that many Democrat presidential candidates, by the time they reach that first debate, which is less than a month from now, they will have to start talking about issues of substance and defining their campaign. It's not going to be enough just to talk about Donald. First of all, if they're just going to talk about Donald Trump, they'll just help Donald Trump get reelected, which I don't think they want to do as Democrat candidates to oppose him. But Dad, anything else you want to add today that people should take away from this before we turn back to the political discussion?
No, I think, look, I mean, this becomes it's now a political matter. It's not a legal matter. I think that's the takeaway. I think that it's you know, look, he spoke because he hadn't made a statement. He's now made the statement, and that's it. So
all right.
I think from a legal standpoint, this matter is closed.
All right. Jay Sekulow, my dad, who's also chief counsel of the ACLJ and one of the president's top attorneys, wanted to join us again. For those of you who just joined us, maybe in the second half hour, so you could hear his live reaction to Bob Mueller's first and final press statement on the Mueller report. Thanks, Dad, again, for joining us, taking the time to do that.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. And you know, the media is making this. We've got all the channels on. They're going to make this a big story for the day. But we do want to get into politics. And we're going to get into politics right now. So I'm not going to wait. When we get out of this next segment, we'll start going through the numbers more. But I do want to hear from people who've been holding on the line. So I want to go right to the phones, and we're going to start going in order. 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. There's a couple lines open, 1-800-684-3110. Remember, the Democrat presidential debate, first one, less than a month away. It's on June 26th and 27th in Miami, Florida. They will be debating two different debate dates. With the top 10 on one day and the second 10 on the next day. So it won't even include all 24 candidates. Let's go right to the phones. Chris in Florida on line 5. Chris, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Chris, you're on the air.
Okay, listening to the layout of the first Democratic debate made me think that the Democrats could really show some class and professional politicianing by letting the lesser-known candidates take the stage first so the American public can be introduced to them, and then the better-known candidates take the stage on the second night.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they negotiate this, and you do have to – it is politics, though, Chris. I mean, I get what you're saying is like giving an opportunity. I think they've tried to do that, too, with all these different town halls they've had, an opportunity. I mean, if you're a presidential candidate and you're willing to go on TV, they'll put you on TV. They will let you speak. You can go to as many events as you want. But there is something to say for being one of the leading candidates. And I think that it is fair that the leading candidates get the primetime position. That's just my position as someone who's worked on these campaigns, is that they have gathered the most resources and support. And that doesn't mean that you can't move from tier two to tier one or drop from tier one to tier two. But then I think one, it would hurt ratings overall. So less people would watch the debates in entirety. If you started off with a bunch of people no one had ever heard of, is the problem.
Yeah, and this might surprise Chris a little bit, Jordan, but if you offered some of those candidates that he is considering tier two that opportunity to appear on the first night, Jordan, all of them would turn it down. They are currently clamoring right now to try to qualify to be one of those top 10 to appear on the main stage. That is really the whole goal, is to try to break through and be on that main stage. So I think it's a nice idea that Chris has. The problem is that the very candidates that I think he's trying to give a good gesture to, Jordan, they don't want that. I mean, they're trying to qualify based on polling and numbers so that they can get one of those prime lecterns during one of the main debates.
Yeah, I mean, you will see, even until like whatever the deadline that the DNC and I guess CNN have agreed to, up until that deadline, you'll see the fundraisers going out saying, get me to the top tier debate, get me on stage, on the main stage for the debate. You'll see the fundraising that goes around that. So as Stan said, no one's jumping at the chance to be in tier two if they have not yet kind of done everything possible with their campaign to try and get to tier one or remain at tier one. That's one of the issues too, is remaining a tier one candidate. People like Beto O'Rourke and others who are kind of had to relaunch their campaigns to remain as a tier one candidate. We're going to go through what we believe are the kind of the top 10 candidates for you. And then out of that, I get your reactions as well. 1-800-684-3110. We'll go through some polling numbers as well. Joe Biden with a big polling lead ahead of his next closest competitor, which is Bernie Sanders. Joe Biden at 34% in the Real Clear average, a Real Cool Politics average. Bernie Sanders at 16%. The next closest candidate is Elizabeth Warren, and she is in single digits at 9%. And then Kamala Harris at 7%. So, I mean, big gaps there. Though it's not as if Joe Biden has run away with it completely, and it's not as if Bernie Sanders has got a lock on the far left vote, because he may be right now the clear number two, but it's not kind of sizing up to be yet right now exactly what he got between Hillary Clinton, which was like a one-on-one race where I think he was able to be elevated to a much more serious candidate. We'll discuss it all when we come back on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up, at aclj.org.
The Hill has a piece that came out yesterday, which I think pretty much agree with. It's not so partisan. It's just talking about who they kind of believe as a newspaper. The top 10 Democrats are currently in the 2020 race. Now, the first one's easy. We all can figure that one out. This is out of 24 with the announcement that New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is running for president as well, which is again, it's unique just how many people are see this as a springboard even to other opportunities, even if they kind of know from the beginning they don't really have a chance. But again, who are the top contenders? Well, obviously, number one, by polling and by finances. He raised the most in 24 hours, just a little bit more than Bernie Sanders did, but he raised $6.3 million. Joe Biden, he's leading in the polls by nearly double the amount Bernie Sanders is. So Biden at 34. Percent, so more than that. Biden at 34.8 in the Real Clear Politics average. Sanders, the closest competitor, at 16.4%. So, and then they're the only two candidates in the double digits. So Biden with a big lead on Bernie Sanders. We don't know where his total fundraising was for like the first quarter because he announced after that. So it will be interesting to see if he's kept it up. But supposedly he's been doing a lot of financial events. Number two is, of course, Bernie Sanders. This is just by money and by polling and by how he did last time around. This is where it gets interesting, I think, Than, is that the Hill still has Elizabeth Warren. Now, she still is in third in the polling, but I mean, but she's in single digits, has had some trouble with fundraising. But they still have Senator Elizabeth Warren up there at number three, and they have Kamala Harris below her. Do you think that Kamala Harris is having trouble because of her time as a prosecutor?
I do think she's having trouble in the primaries. I wouldn't go so far as the Hill, though, Jordan. I honestly think while there's a pretty big drop-off after those first two, I would go to Kamala Harris next, mainly because of that $12 million that she raised in the first quarter. I do know Elizabeth Warren is third in the polls, the polling average. Jordan, she's got some real problems. It's very hard for me personally to see Elizabeth Warren winning the primary. So I would go to Kamala Harris next, but I do agree with you. I think the reason that she has fallen in some people's minds is because inside a Democrat primary, Jordan, that time as a prosecutor, that's working against her.
So number five, they've got Mayor Pete. And again, you know, this is interesting that Kamala Harris was previously ranked number one in the Hill. That's what I was saying before, is that before Joe Biden got in, she was kind of going to be the number one contender, people thought, to Bernie Sanders, at least the less liberal option, if you will, the less socialist option. So again, she's dropping down in their rankings, which will constantly be moved around, especially after the debates. But then number five, still surprising to me, the South Bend, Indiana mayor, Mayor Pete. I mean, again, he's 37 years old. He's not much older than me. His experience is being, a medium-sized town mayor, which, again, nothing against South Bend. But, again, that's his top kind of political experience. And yet, Than, I mean, he's right. He's going to be there in the top, probably on the top-tier stage. And that's going to be interesting, I think, for some of these candidates like Joe Biden to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, this cuts both ways for me, Jordan. I mean, first of all, just as a premise, now we're talking about candidates that I don't believe have a good chance at this nomination. I think we're talking about a clear tier two or tier three. That said, I would still put Mayor Pete above Elizabeth Warren, honestly, Jordan, just because once it gets beyond the first couple of tiers, if he is still alive, if he is still relevant, I think he might possibly appeal in more places than does Elizabeth Warren. But again, I just feel like I need to reiterate, once you get past those top three of the declared candidates, I think we're talking about people that aren't going to be the nominee.
Yeah, so here's the next. So six is Beto O'Rourke. He's dropped in the ranking from fourth to sixth. He's tried to relaunch his campaign. Number seven, Cory Booker. I've never thought he was able to take off. I just don't think he's got what it takes to be a real presidential candidate. And again, it's nothing even against him. I disagree with his policies. It just doesn't seem like he's got the right kind of connection to voters. And politically, he's kind of plays maybe just not clear enough for constituents. Number eight is Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. Never thought she had a real chance, but she's still in the top 10 from the Hill. You got the former HUD secretary, Julian Castro, and then number 10, businessman Andrew Yang, who has promised everybody that $1,000 a month and is not coming from the political world. Dan, do you think that's what the who the top 10 will be on the debate stage a month from now?
I don't know if they'll be the top 10 on the debate stage. I don't have a big argument that those are the top 10 as far as chances go. There might be a couple other people that will end up polling harder. Remember, Jordan, they're going to average the last three major polls that are taken leading up as the tiebreaker for who gets into those top 10. I'm not so sure that someone like Andrew Yang is going to break into that. Although, I don't know, Jordan, maybe a $1,000 check will be enough to sway people that he is worth 1% or 2%.
All right, let's get to the calls. I know people have been holding on. Let's go to Cole in California on line 6. Cole, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yeah, thanks, team. My question, I understand that Joe Biden appears to be the front runner in the Democratic presidential candidates among them. Why have we not heard anything from Hillary Clinton? And do you think that at some point she may pop out of nowhere and say, surprise?
I never put anything past the Clintons. I want to be on record right now saying that. But I think her campaign was very poorly run. She had a lot of issues. Those issues would all arise again. Clinton Foundation issues are still being investigated. I mean, so it's still being looked at by the Department of Justice. So she's still facing a lot of potential legal issues. She's already been beaten by President Trump. So she has shown that she was, with everybody thought he had no path to victory, and her campaign decided not to go to places that they needed to. And even that, I'm not sure she would have won, but I mean, she got beaten handily by President Trump. So I don't think there's anyone in the Democrat Party. I'm not saying Hillary Clinton doesn't want to do it, but the Democratic Party major players want her in the race. I don't think they do. And so I think that's the biggest concern there. Back to the phones. Let's go to Dan in Michigan, line 4.
Hello.
Hey, Dan.
Hello, yes. Yeah, I don't think that Biden's the best candidate. He's not the best orator, but I think that the party will do for him what they won't do for Bernie, and that's argue the issues for him.
Yeah, he'll kind of get the Hillary Clinton treatment again. He's never gotten to this point before. You know, he's run before for president. He's usually had to drop out very early, but he has become the vice president, so he's been on the major campaign trail on center stage. And yes, the mainstream Democrats are hoping they can get someone like if they're still in the leadership position. I mean, I'm not sure Tom Perez I would consider to be one of those people. I mean, he's pretty leftist. So I do think that they're looking for a Biden type, but I'm not sure that's speaking for the leadership necessarily.
I fully agree with you, Jordan. I mean, I think the party apparatus, by and large, probably does want him. I think Perez is probably an exception to that. But remember, you know, that I don't think that's going to carry quite as much sway as it did last time. I mean, basically, the party chose Hillary Clinton, and that was the end of the story last time, Jordan. If that had been a fair process, Bernie Sanders would have won. Those rules have changed some now. The party may prefer Joe Biden, but that's not the end of the story.
Final call of the day, Isaiah in Arizona. You've got, 50 seconds here, Isaiah, but I wanted to get to all the calls.
Okay, so what I was going to say is a candidate I see competing with Trump that's coming is Michelle Obama.
I would not be surprised if she has a political future. I would be shocked that she decides that her first campaign she wants to run against Donald Trump because he's shown how tough of a candidate he is. I mean, Than, what do you think about that comment? I mean, I think they may try to pull her in last minute if they are just polling horrendously. As some kind of savior, but taking the punches from Donald Trump in your first campaign is pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a candidate that's not declared that has a chance, she might be it, Jordan, but I will wager that her run is a few years away.
Yeah, and I think it is coming. I think that running against Trump is not best option for her, and I don't think she would disagree. We'll talk.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.